Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Among many members of the Black community in America, summer is often marked by family reunions. They are a cause for reconnection, celebration, storytelling, food, and more. And they also have their roots in American history. After emancipation, formerly enslaved people began searching for family members, mothers, fathers, brothers, sisters, children, torn away because they were sold. Reunions may be more important than most realize and more wide-ranging. The Pew Research Center's discovered that Black Americans have wider family networks than other U.S. adults, often including non-relatives. Among Black adults, Pew reports 77% have at least one non-relative they consider to be family. These networks have also have roots in our history. They are connections which help Black Americans cope through emancipation, Jim Crow, and economic inequality. And today, they are a way to remember that history, that struggle, and what has been accomplished. And here to paint an even better picture of the importance of these events is Ernie Suggs. He's a journalist with the Atlanta Journal-Constitution who writes about race and culture. He joins us along with Jasmine Ballard, founder and executive creative director at Melanotion, which describes itself as the living archive of Black memory, an organization dedicated to preserving stories, wisdom, and lived experiences of marginalized communities with the belief that memory becomes medicine. And Dr. Denise Spruill is with us. She's an adjunct professor and director of the Ronald McNair Scholars Program at Johnson C. Smith University. Good morning, everybody. Thank you for being here. Welcome.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
Ernie, I'm going to start with you. You've written a lot about this, and lots of families have reunions. So was my explanation of Black family reunions sufficient to understand what makes these different?
Yeah, it was perfect. I mean, I think that what we're looking at when we talk about Black family reunions is that we do it more than other ethnic groups across the country. And I think we do it more because we have more at stake. We have a deeper, well, I don't want to say a deeper legacy, but we have a legacy that was built on trauma. A lot of stuff that, you know, we deal with, and your listeners will understand this, a lot of stuff that we deal with as Black Americans comes from trauma. It comes from slavery. It's rooted in slavery. It's rooted in how we had to respond to our emancipation, you know, some 150 so years ago, and a family reunion. And I didn't realize this until I started researching it, but once I started researching it, it became crystal clear that our use of family, our embrace of the family reunion comes directly out of our separation from family. The fact that during slavery, during the time in which we were slaves, in which we were enslaved, the concept of a Black family did not really exist, if you really, really think about it, because we could be taken away from each other so quickly. So once we became emancipated, and we can talk about this later, and I'm sure our other guests can talk about this as well. Once we became emancipated, the concept of family became so much stronger, and we reached out to reconnect our families, and that's why the family reunions became such a big part of who we are as a culture.
Yeah, you couldn't take them for granted. You couldn't take families for granted because you spent a lot, and we'll talk about this, people spent a lot of time trying to find family members following emancipation. Jasmine, for the uninitiated, give me the ingredients for a typical Black family reunion. What happens?
Well, first of all, I feel like you need the family present, everybody willing to show up. I think it's the first part, with an open heart and spirit. I think the second piece of that is actually showing your family history, talking about your family history at these reunions, because they're intergenerational most of the time. So the younger people also need to understand all that has happened within the family history, and just for everyone across the ages being reminded, as Ernie said, as to why the family is even coming together, and just the vast legacy. And of course, we can't forget the good food and music.
That was my next question. What do people look most forward to? Is it the food? Is it the conversation? Is it the history lesson? Is it just the getting? What is it?
Yeah, so I know just gearing up for my family reunion, which is actually happening Juneteenth in Augusta, Georgia. I think the conversation is the biggest thing for us. On my grandmother's side, we meet about every year, or every other year. So for us, it's just because we are scattered geographically all across, it's important for us to come together and really remind ourselves that our great, great, great grandmother Lizzie Heath, who started this legacy for us, is still amongst us all today.
Dr. Denise Sproul is also with us from Johnson C. Smith University. How different, if at all, are Black family reunions from the reunions of any other family? Because lots of families have reunions, Doctor.
Absolutely. And I think just to go back on some of the things you've said in regards to just the history of it, just to put a little bit of data to the context, after 250 years of slavery, 4 million people were freed. And it's the ideal of reunion, and to think of roughly half of all enslaved people had been separated either from a spouse or a parent. And 1 in 4 of those were children who were sold apart. So when we think about reunion and the act of coming together after being apart, the number one goal of the newly freed was to reunite families. And so in the difference is, I think, the historical context of it, the fact that African Americans have made the family reunion an institution. I think it is the history of reuniting, rewriting the narrative of a family, creating the narrative of a family that had once not existed on purpose. And I think the idea rooted in creating strength and a safe space in times, safe space all the time. I think one thing that continues to be different for African American family reunions. And most importantly, just the oral history. And we can do all the other things with technology, but the oral history, the storytelling, the building of family, just sense of pride, I think, is different.
Ernie, in one of your posts for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution on Facebook, you say the beauty of Black people is that we are all family. Give me the context of that comment, of that observation.
Yeah, I mean, I think that when I said that, I can't remember exactly when I said it, but I can talk about it. I think that when we talk about our separation, when we talk about how African Americans have created a sense of having to build families as well as having to establish your own families. I just got back from Charlotte, ironically, last night, and I was at the Alpha Luau. I'm not sure if Jasmine and Denise are involved in that, but I was at the Alpha Luau, and that's kind of a family reunion. I was with my fraternity brothers, and 500 Black people are gathered to, have fun and dance and party and all that stuff. So, and we're, most of the people that I met were not family members, obviously, but they became a kinship of a spirited collective group of people who were all had the same goals of just having a good time. And I think that we as African Americans are often searching for family members, or have often, like you mentioned, everyone in our families, Jasmine and Dr. Sproul can attest to that. All of us have family members who are not family members. All of us have cousins who are not cousins, and aunts who are not aunts, that we claim because these are people who've accepted us, people whom we've accepted, whether it's good times or bad times. I grew up in Brooklyn, New York, and I have dozens of aunts and uncles that I consider my aunts and uncles that I found out as adults were not, but they were just people who accepted out my family there. And became these family members. So it's a long, complicated labyrinth of maze of Black people who are all, everyone has what we call in the Black community, play cousins.
Denise, in that same post that Ernie made on Facebook for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, he points out that the Pew Research Center says that no ethnic group in the country takes family reunions as seriously as Black people do. If you agree with that, talk about what that means to a family, a Black family, these reunions.
Absolutely. I think just at the root, of course, it's an ability, again, to connect family, to create legacy, of course, to give elders a space to be leaders and to be respected, in particular in the post-emancipation period where that had been denied them when they were enslaved. I think now the family reunion is not necessarily just, of course, it's surrounded and around the food, but it can be anything from a small gathering to, a weekend affair. It could be a business meeting. It could be church services. It could be I mean, we've done health initiatives at our family reunions just to talk about diabetes and high blood pressure. I mean, it can be all the things, and it could be just as small as just as big, which I don't want people to be scared to even plan one because they think they have to be grandiose, but they can be what you want them to be as long as you are connecting legacy, oral tradition, and community, just community, family community.
We're going to talk about in some depth in the next segment about how this all began and why it all began and why it is so meaningful to the first several generations following emancipation and continues to be so today. But Denise, Jasmine, why does it continue to be so important today? Why has it? I know it's become a tradition, but traditions sometimes dissipate and fall by the wayside. This is one that does not seem to have done so.
Right. I think we just see a widespread failure overall to preserve Black history across our nation. And so where we can start to fix that is exactly what Dr. Spurl said, right in our families, right at our kitchen tables, right in the church pews, even documenting our own personal stories. And I think the jux of that really does pop off at a family reunion, right? Where not only are we remembering our family legacies, but we get to see the piece that we play a part of our family stories as well. And it's very crucial to just remember that, remember who we are. It's a lot, it has a lot to do with our self-identity work as well when we look at just the institution of a family reunion also.
Mm. We're going to get into some of the history of all this in a moment, and a lot of folks who are not members of the Black community may not completely understand how this all began or why it all began, but you will if you stick with us. We're talking about Black family reunions this morning on Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Ernie, it is said that African Americans would have been unable to endure the violence and the exploitation, first of enslavement, then of racism, without a strong and cohesive family to provide guidance and education and support and, most importantly, safety. Is that why these reunions are taken so seriously in the community? And does that continue to be the case?
Yeah, that continues to be the case, and that's exactly why. I mean, I think if you think about family reunions, you think about the emancipation, you think about the end of slavery. You know, when African-Americans were set free, were emancipated, you know, we were just set free out into the country. We were just set free out into the wild. And that meant, that did not necessarily mean that we were set free as a family unit, because our brothers and sisters and wives and husbands were often sold from us. You know, between, I don't have the exact figure, and I can look that up as we talk. But, you know, when African-Americans were emancipated, you know, you were set out and you spent the rest of your life looking for your son or your daughter or your wife or your husband that, you know, that you had grown up with and had lived with. And that was just kind of like the violence of slavery. People don't understand that the violence of slavery meant that you were treated like cattle or a dog or a pig or a cow, and you could be separated immediately, or you can be separated at any time. So when that emancipation came, people spent the rest of their lives looking for their people. And when you spend the rest of your time looking for your people, when that reunion comes, it becomes this glorious event. And that's kind of why we, even today, look at family as something. I mean, we don't look at family, I don't think we look at it as better or greater than any other ethnic group, but I do think we look at the reunion aspect of it as greater than other groups, because it was such a struggle to get to where we are. It's always a struggle to get to family and to meet family. And that's something that's kind of today coded inside of us. You know, you had the Great Migration. I grew up in Brooklyn, New York, but my mother was from North Carolina. So we would always, she migrated to New York. So we would always talk about going down south. I think that's part of it as well, just going down south to see our family.
It's kind of encoded in your DNA, I would guess, yes, after all these generations. We have to take a break. We'll come back with more in just a moment. We're talking about Black family reunions on Charlotte Talks on WFAE. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about Black family reunions this morning with Ernie Suggs, a journalist with the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Jasmine Ballard is founder and executive creative director of Melanotion. And Dr. Denise Spruill is an adjunct professor at Johnson C. Smith University. We talked a little while ago about the violence of slavery, and that does not just mean beatings by overseers. It means the fact that people were treated like cattle. They were personal property, little else, and they were traded and sold and families torn apart. And that's the violence, the real violence of being enslaved. We are a nation, however, of immigrants, Jasmine, and most people can trace their lineage back generations. They may even be able to not just find their country of origin, but they can trace family members. Many Black Americans, I would say most Black Americans, probably cannot to a certain point because they were brought here involuntarily, given new names, bought and sold for centuries. So does that make this reconnection with people that they do know and they do have an ability to trace back even more important?
I definitely think it makes it more important. And I think one thing that that Ernie was talking about before we went into break was really just gathering as a community practice in the Black community. And I would say that's what really makes things different for us. It's communal. I think historically for us, we have fought to preserve community because we have been all that we have had. And I think even in this modern day 2026, that practice still shows up, but we have to work hard to just preserve it and make sure people understand the importance of it. And then also when we look back to just the traumas that have happened in our community, I mean, we talk a lot about the generational traumas, but we also have to talk about the blessings of the fact that our communities have always and will always band together. And the family reunion is just an example of that.
I don't know if any of people on this panel can answer this question, but I'll throw it to Ernie. This is a little off the topic, but there have been scientific advances that allow us to use DNA to identify people and connections between people. What role, if any, is DNA playing in finding family members who might otherwise be lost forever?
Yeah, that's playing a larger and bigger role, a more important role, the DNA, the ancestry.com. One of the story, you've read my story, but one of the stories within my story was a woman who met a side of her family that she had never known and decided to travel after 10 years of kind of corresponding with these family members that she had never met, that her father's shared the last name and never met them and didn't want to meet them. But she met them on DNA. She met them through Ancestry.com, and she drove to Mississippi to be a part of this family. So it plays a large role. I do Ancestry.com. I've met some family members that I didn't know that I had, and it's been a kind of a blessing to kind of open up another door, another avenue with modern technology to kind of go back in the past and meet family members.
I have to admit that there are members of my family that I just assume not associate with very often. And I'm just wondering that because of the importance of these reunions in the African-American community, does when you factor in there are probably people in your families that you don't get along with, does it feel like an obligation? Does it feel like yet another responsibility laid on people that they have to perform this ritual every year or every other year? Does that just evaporate?
I think really, and I can give my perspective and I'll pass it over to Dr. Spiro. I think that just depends on the family, right? And those potential dynamics. At first, I was going to answer that and say generationally, that may change. But to be honest, some younger people and families really are now the main drivers in making sure these family reunions still come together. I think about my dad's family, my grandfather, before he passed, he was that patriarch in the family, making sure that the Ballards met, you know, every other year. And now that my grandfather has passed for 2 years, we have not met or had a reunion. Whereas on my mother's side, the younger people are taking charge and the elders are making sure that we are in place to be able to continue on this family gathering legacy, even after things pass on. So I really think that's just specific to your family.
Dr. Sproul?
Absolutely. I would agree with that. And the notion of like focusing on the positive, right? I think the question is not whether like the younger generation will care. It's whether the structures that exist, there's a structure that exists to pass, you know, with the knowledge, with the motivation, with the skills of organizing them, to what Jasmine said. And having, I think, Jasmine, you said at the beginning that you're co-hosting, you know, your family reunion, the training up, if you will, the younger generation to participate, I think focuses on the positive. And even when there are challenges within a family, as I'm sure all families have, hopefully it's this time period where family can come together and overlook those things in regards to just talking about legacy and the backgrounds of the family.
Ernie.
And I think that the family reunions, particularly in Black communities, take different forms. Mm-hmm. I can't recall a moment in my family's history where we've had a quote unquote family reunion, per se, where we've had t-shirts and people gathered. But we've had graduations, we've had weddings, we've had deaths, unfortunately. And these are these opportunities, again, to kind of gather as a family, to gather as a whole. But we've not had that formal, we're going to have a family reunion, we're going to spend years planning it, we're going to do it every year. We've not done that. But again, we've had these quote unquote reunions where we've gotten together as a family for monumental events. Unfortunately, a lot of those happen to be funerals, which becomes another problem as well, because we definitely need to start getting together as families.
If I could add to that, though, I think that's important. I married into a family that will be celebrating their 57th consecutive family reunion this year over the 4th of July weekend. And what I can tell you in regards to, we've had loss, we've had weddings, we've had births, but I think what the family reunion does is, in an instant, it will make an opportunity for everybody to share their experience over the time they've been apart. I think that's the most important thing about a family reunion. It's not just focused on one event. I think everybody can come together and share what's going on in their lives at that time. And Ernie, I agree with you. You know, sadly, even in my own family, you know, we come together just for weddings or for funerals, but we have decided that we need to do better. So that we can celebrate everyone in the family in a certain way and have family reunions.
Denise, Keith Claybrook, who is a professor of Africana Studies at California State University, writing for a publication called Black Perspectives, says that, quote, "The family reunion is a celebration that strengthens bonds and renews love." And he says that celebrations for African Americans are an act of resistance because it engenders Black joy. Is that a widely held view?
I would agree with it, absolutely. And I could say that people would agree with it as well. I think absolutely it's a challenge to the norm of people coming together, having agency to create their own narrative. And so absolutely. And the ideal of celebrating joy, Black joy, I think is a phenomenal perspective, making the family reunion more, to his point, a cultural institution. So absolutely, I would agree with that.
Jasmine?
And to go off what Dr. Sproul said about just being able to create our own agency and narratives, I think what's really important is when we come into these settings, being able to really talk about the history of our families, right? We know in school and in our institutions what we've learned about Blackness and who we are. A lot of us can go back and trace that slavery, but let's be honest, some of us Black folks have been here and we have roots here. And when we start to open up that narrative with the elders specifically who have those stories, a lot of Black people will see that they've been one indigenous to this nation, as well as mixed with African history, Caribbean history. We are the blueprint, and that starts to come out in conversations.
Yeah, talk about that, because that's one of the things that we don't learn in school. We don't hear it in history classes. It's a family history, and their disparate members of the family have completely different experiences depending upon what part of the country they live in, etc. Talk about the educational function of this in terms of informing people who they are and where they came from. Because it is said that if you don't know where you came from, you don't know who you are.
I'll kick it off here if you don't mind and pass it over. I think for me, just to give a family example, when I sat with my grandfather 6 days before he passed, we filmed his family story and then he passed away. So he kind of shared all this narrative with us about his life, family history that we never would have known, him kind of talking about our roots to slavery, our non-connection to slavery as well, and the land that my family has lived on, it seems, for over 100 years, you know, out in North Carolina. I would have never known some of this information if I didn't sit with my elders, my grandparents on both sides of my family, to really just ask basic questions about what was life growing up for them and their time with their grandparents. And I'm talking to my grandparents who were born in the 30s, you know, in early 40s. I would never have a window into that experience. I would only have it from my world history book, you know, from school. And it's different when you're sitting in the room with an elder who's also had these experiences.
Dr. Sproul.
Absolutely. I've been teaching African-American history for over 20 years. And I will say, One of the things I do in most every class is ask students to go home and interview their oldest living relative and to do an oral history. And I think over my years of teaching, I think that's been one of the most profound things, where students come back not have known anything, thinking that their immediate family is just from Charlotte, and not understanding the implications of migration, of the legacy of their family and enslavement, and all of those things. And so I think education absolutely plays a role in that, and asking the questions. You know, I think to your point about us not knowing a lot about history, I mean, I will say this, Ancestry.com has also helped in my teaching too, where I can send students to try to find their family members in that way. And I think for the average non-researching person, things like Ancestry.com can definitely connect you to family.
Go ahead, Ernie, go ahead.
I think what Jasmine and Denise are saying is so true and so specific. And in 1976, as you all know, Alex Haley published his book, Roots. And that was a turning point in terms of family reunions. It was a turning point in terms of Black people trying to connect with their ancestors. And that, as Jasmine said, that oral history is so important. It was so important that you were able to get that family member's story before he passed away, unfortunately. And I think we should all, I think a lot of family reunions have that as a component of the gathering, to kind of get those oral histories. And I think it's so very, very important, because these oral histories are going to go away if we don't collect them. And I think that Roots and DNA and Ancestry.com are all these kind of avenues that are inside the family reunions, aside from the food and the gathering and the dancing and all that kind of stuff. But to use these opportunities to kind of gather those family stories are going to be very, very important.
The gathering of these stories, Jasmine, strikes me as your bailiwick, because this is what your organization does. We're in this digital age now where young people particularly are lost in their devices. They're lost in their phones. Their heads are always down looking at scrolling stuff. Your organization, Melanotion, sees itself as a movement built on storytelling and preservation and celebrations of cultural heritage and creating connections across generations. Do younger people have the same interest in history and maintaining these connections as the older generation does?
I think that we do. Again, I think this is case by case, person by person, family by family. But just speaking as a 34 Black millennial in America, I would say that I do, and my circles do as well. I mean, my whole thing is, we are the living ancestors today. A lot of times when we think of our ancestors, we think of those who have passed. But if we start to think about our documentation or our family archives as something living, we see ourselves as part of that. So back to what Dr. Sproul talked about having that toolkit for the younger generation to be prepared. It's more about the system that we're creating and how we see ourselves a part of that. I would say more than just the care of being able to actually continue that reunion. Because once we understand who we are, we know our family legacy, it starts to shape our self-identity, and pride comes with that. And once we build that pride within our families, it's something that we want to continue to remember who we are and motivate us to keep that legacy moving forward.
And you have said that in order to grow yourself, you have to know yourself. And if you don't truly know who you are, how can you truly grow? Expand on that.
Yeah, I just feel like we can remain stagnant if we don't have one cultural pride of who we are, or one self-identity to continue to move us forward. And that's in anything, right? When it comes to family relations, career, self-development as well. And I think historically, Black people, we have not had the ability to fully learn who we are. There's so much hidden around who we are as a people that we should be discovering, asking more questions about. And so as we've kind of talked about here today, one, it starts with that family, that personal story, that family story, and then that moves on to the community and institutional layer. What we have seen, though, historically through our communities, is we're fighting so much for things happening in the community that sometimes we're often losing that family and personal ecosystem story that really shapes what happens in our communities and institutions.
You nodded in recognition of that, Ernie, when she was talking about that.
Yeah, I think that our stories are, we can't lose them. That's the thing. We can't lose our stories. We have to continue to tell our stories. We have to continue to kind of figure out ways in which we have to tell our stories. When I was writing my story last year about Black family reunions, I was amazed at every family that I talked to, because every family had a different route in which they were finding who their families were and how they were maintaining their family legacies and how they were carrying forth, which is the most important thing that Jasmine is doing and talks about, how they're carrying forth their family legacies to a new generation. Because, you know, people like Jasmine and her age group, those are the people who are going to have to start carrying forth these family traditions, because people like me who, you know, are getting older, or people like my parents or whatever, they're getting tired. They don't want to do the family reunions anymore. They're looking for people like Jasmine to kind of take it over. And if people like Jasmine don't take it over, these family stories are going to die.
We're talking about the legacy of Black family reunions this morning on Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Somebody wanted to speak and I didn't see who was talking. Go ahead, Doctor.
Absolutely. I was just going to add to that as well. And Jasmine, of course, your generation taking the realm, it's phenomenal. And I would just challenge to say too, you know, I have a 16-year-old son who we are beginning to train up. I mean, I don't ever think it's too early for the young people in your family to understand truly how important family connection is. And sometimes I often think the earlier you start, the better off you're going to be. And so, again, I agree with the ideal of training up the younger generation.
Denise, Ebony Magazine, in an article from last summer, quotes author Veronica Lynn Clark as saying, quote, reconnecting with family isn't just about reunion. It's about repairing what has been passed down. It's about generational healing. It means naming what was once unspoken, interrupting cycles of pain, and restoring dignity to our lineage so our children inherit something more whole. She calls it sacred work. I'm assuming you agree with that. So talk about generational healing, about what is being healed in these reunions and how that impacts those involved.
I absolutely agree with that. And the ideal of sacred healing, just in regards to, as we talked about earlier, just for 4 million formerly enslaved people who had the number one goal of reuniting family. And it's the creating of a history. I want people to understand of a history that was forcibly tried to be erased. And so, again, the healing work is to reunite, create leadership, give leadership roles oftentimes early on to folks who are not allowed to have them in community.
And with that, we have to stop. I'll come back with more in a moment in Charlotte Talks. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFAE.org. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about Black family reunions this morning. Summertime is the season for that around the country. Ernie Suggs is with us. He is a journalist with the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Jasmine Ballard is founder and executive creative director of Melanotion. And Dr. Denise Sproul is an adjunct professor and director of the Ronald McNair Scholars Program at Johnson C. Smith University. We've spoken about these Black family reunions as being acts of resistance because they engender Black joy. We've talked about these reunions being sacred work because it's reconnection. It's about repairing and healing, generational healing. And you were in the middle of talking about that, Dr. Sproul. Continue.
Absolutely. And I was going to finish with just saying, you know, reunions at this point, of course, I can't say enough how leadership, purpose, power, restoring Black dignity, I think, is one of the most important things that can be challenged under racism. And I think this is what happens at Black family reunions.
These Black family reunions, as I understand it, and please correct me if I'm wrong, Ernie, have their genesis in the search for family members in the immediate aftermath of emancipation. People looking for people who were torn from their families because of being enslaved. How were these searches in the early days conducted?
Well, obviously, you know, it was word of mouth. People walked from state to state, plantation to plantation, former plantation to plantation. They asked questions, but they also put in ads in newspapers. You know, you would see these lost ones ads all over Black newspapers all over the South, all over white newspapers all over the South, of people continuously looking for their family members. And in my story, particularly, if you give me a moment to talk about this, but in 1917, I work at the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, in 1917, 50 years after the Emancipation Proclamation, and Mr. and Mrs. Johnny Dillard of Lynchburg, Virginia, wrote that I wish to find my 9 children Molly, Daniel, John, Millie, Tommy, Melinda, Jimmy, Monsi, and Margaret Jane, who were last heard of were sold by Negro traders. Right for information. This is 50 years after the Emancipation Proclamation in 1917, an ad that they placed in the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, still looking for their 9 children. So when you think about that trauma that we talked about, it was a lingering trauma that lasted lifetimes, and people never stopped searching for family members, as you can imagine. And it was, out of these ads, only about 2% of these people were ever found, particularly from the ads that were placed in newspapers across the country. But people always searched, they continue to search.
What role did Black newspapers play in helping people find people?
They played a large role, but as you can imagine, Black newspapers were not as prevalent as obviously the Atlanta Journal, the Atlanta Constitution at the time. So they played a large role, but it wasn't as prevalent. As I mentioned, in these ads, only about roughly 2% of the ads were actually successful in terms of finding people. So a lot of people were never found, but a lot of people who were found, and a lot of people were never found, but a lot of people who were found, there's no record of being found or whatever. It's never, you know, there's never a follow-up story about someone being found, but it was very, very sporadic. It was very rare. And that's why people continue to search. And that's why people, when they found each other, and that's why, again, that's why family reunions are so important, because the search for family never stops.
Of course, we read differently than we did back then, and newspapers are different than they were back then. I can remember a time when the want ads were in every newspaper every single day, and that's mm-hmm. kind of what these were. These are little teeny ads, yeah. all different, all having very disparate messages. You really had to stumble upon these things to find them, and I'm curious about the people who read the Atlanta Journal-Constitution at the time in 1917, 50 years after emancipation, who was reading this? Who might find out about this? Who might know about it? But it seems to be so infinitesimal as to be almost impossible.
Yeah. You talk about the ads. This ad I particularly read was placed between someone who had lost an umbrella and someone who had lost their silk coat. So that shows just how rare this was, how the value of Black life is put between an umbrella and a lost coat. Mm. So that's kind of like, you know, that kind of like shows you just how important this was, but it shows you also how insignificant this was to a larger group of readers who were reading the paper.
Did freed, formerly enslaved Black people have access to the records of plantations? Because we know that plantation owners kept records and they traded people back and forth and they wrote down what was sold and who was sold. And sometimes there were names attached, sometimes there were not. Did they have access to those records so that they could assist themselves in their search?
They did not. After emancipation, they did not have access to those records, which is why oftentimes, not just newspapers, you know, and I will add to what Ernie said, you know, there were newspapers that sporadically ran ads, but there were some specific Black newspapers that did a really good job with information wanted sections that would take up the whole back pages. In particular, the Christian Recorder, which is, of course, the paper of the AME Church. And again, in about 1868, it was the most published Black newspaper in the country and always ran some type of a back page with these type of ads. And then you have them sporadically through other newspapers in Tennessee, in Ohio, in California. And so I think along with that, though, we also have to remember just the community networks. Black churches throughout the country were also making these statements. We have someone in our membership who's moved here who knows there's a family member here. So they also use, you know, community networks, church networks, organizational networks as well to find their loved ones.
I was going to ask about word of mouth, because as people were bought and sold and moved from plantation to plantation, the other enslaved people knew about the history of that person coming into their new family and would know that they came from Mississippi or Alabama, and here they are in North Carolina, et cetera. Which was more effective, the word of mouth, talking to people who knew people because they worked with people on various plantations, or were these ads more effective?
I mean, I would have to agree with Ernie. Normally the ads are placed and then there's never a follow-up story. So it's kind of hard to gauge in the early 20th century which one was more effective. I don't think the data exists to really guesstimate it. I think the beauty of it is that all these things were working in concert just to get people back together.
This reaching out seems very depressing when you realize that the chances of reconnection were slim. But Jasmine Ashanti-Reese, who's an associate professor of African American and African Diaspora Studies at the University of Texas at Austin, who is researching Black gatherings, says that what makes reunions so special is the tradition it comes from, this search for family members. And she says, reading those advertisements, seeing that hope on paper, just made me even more committed to this tradition. These are people who are using the last little bit of money or the last bit of social capital that they have. And these reunions honor that tradition. Is she right?
I agree with that. And even just to take a step further back, just with the ads as well, but also just the fact that we now have access through Ancestry.com and other sources, the census records of our families too, where a lot of us can not only see where our families were, the land that they owned or worked on or sharecropped on, but we also can see just how our titles and labels have shifted over time as well too with our family. So I think that when we put that together, census data together with these advertisements that our families were putting out, it really shapes a picture of who we are culturally and how we should move forward today.
Ernie, you mentioned the Great Migration, which happened as people were trying to escape the oppression of Jim Crow in the South. Southern Black Americans moved to the Midwest and the Northeast to escape all of that. It was a voluntary disbursement, but did that increase the importance of having these family reunions?
Oh, of course, most definitely. My mother moved, as an example, my mother moved from North Carolina to New York City in the 1960s, and we always talked about going down south. That was the thing, to go down south, to go back home to North Carolina every summer or whatever, to spend summers with my grandmother. So that whole migration to the north, Isabel Wilkerson wrote beautifully about that, but that whole migration to the north and to the Midwest served as an important connection to our roots back in the South. So we wanted to come back in the South. We wanted to come back. We held those traditions up north, but the South was always kind of pulling us back, coming back home to our families. And even if you look at, I know Dr. Sproul is at Johnson C. Smith. I'm not sure where Jasmine went to school. I went to North Carolina Central University. Mm-hmm. Historically, Black colleges also serve a role. Homecoming serve a role. Homecoming is one of these important things that a lot of people see us do every year, but mm-hmm. homecoming is that essence of taking the fact that we attended Black colleges, that we were not able to attend white colleges at a time, and coming back and reclaiming what's ours, reclaiming that part of our family. So it's all kind of part and parcel of Black people taking ownership of how we celebrate who we are as Black people.
And if I understand this correctly, although these have always been important, there was this lull in having these family reunions until the publication of Roots, Alex Haley's mammoth novel, and then the TV show. I think people who were not around in the late 70s, who did not experience Roots on television, have no idea how powerful that television show was. Everybody watched Roots. This is a time when network television was all powerful. So am I right in saying, Dr. Sproul, that revitalized the interest in the Black community of finding each other again?
Absolutely. I think that was a turning point where it sent families back to family Bibles. It sent people back to different archives, because of course this is before Ancestry and everything else existed. And it sent people asking questions about truly their family roots, just as the name of it. I think it spurred a moment. I actually remember watching it as a child myself. I think it sparked the understanding that the true history of African Americans is much deeper than just slavery. And I think it made families begin to look at their history, want to document their history, want to create family trees, and then, of course, have reunions. Absolutely.
Jasmine, has one of the functions or happy coincidences of these reunions over the years been that because of reconnections being made, long-lost relations have been discovered?
Yeah, I would say so. And I would say even long lost relations just across, you know, people are scattered. We all have busy lives, right? So sometimes we're not even able to check in with family, even in this digital age with all the technology and social platforms that we have. It seems like we're more disconnected than ever to our family, even though we have the connectivity, the accessibility to connect. So I think when we come into these family reunions, we're really able to, I think like Ernie and Dr. Sproul have already said, spend that time connecting with each other, catching back up, hearing the stories about where a family may be. And they could just be a first cousin who's a state over.
And Denise, these family reunions are still ongoing at a time when, as Jasmine just said, we have the ability to connect instantaneously with almost anybody in the world at any time of the day or night. And we can do it not just by voice, but we can do it by Zoom. We can see each other. So has that had an impact on or decreased the necessity of these family reunions? Or can that feeling that you get, that connection that you get from in-person family reunions really be replaced?
I will say that feeling of in-person interaction can never be replaced. And you know, there is research that shows that maybe the younger generation feels that family reunions might not be as important because they can connect and see, you know, day to day what their favorite cousin is doing online. However, I think, again, to Ernie and Jasmine's point is the ideal of building this into your family will continue to make this want to be an institution in your family. You know, technology, I know if you use Ancestry.com, you can get a little leaf that says you have a connection and you will have met someone that you didn't meet. But it's that in-person connection that truly brings a family together. It's that oral history, that firsthand oral history that you can't necessarily get by just looking at Facebook. I think that is truly important.
We're talking about the history of and importance of family reunions among black families in America this morning on Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Jasmine, go ahead.
No, I just want to add to that to say that, you know, we do use our genealogy sites as well, but I think the issue is we're overall just struggling to document and preserve our family histories and mostly our cultural heritage in Black communities in a way that our future generations can truly, one, access and see themselves a part of. So while we do have Ancestry.com, I think they focus a lot on data and connection, as we've talked about, but they're not really helping a family capture the richness of their tradition, you know, a Black family memory, what your grandma did, how she cooked that sweet water cornbread. You know, it's not capturing those cultural narratives. So near or far, digital or in person, it's something that we have to actively preserve.
And Dr. Sproul, that was mentioned in an article a couple of years ago by the Charlotte Observer. They quoted a psychologist, Rosalind Newton, who shared a story about her own family reunion traditions. And she says it's especially important for minorities to know their family history, to pass on information, and for their emotional health. It helps us be more aware and more supportive of one another on the whole. Is that how it's viewed?
I think so, and I agree absolutely with Jasmine. I think family reunions create an opportunity to create context for the photographs, for the documents, for the recipes, for the family heirlooms, just to give a meaning. The in-person part, I think, nothing can take the place of that. And to your point, Jasmine, again, the ability to figure out who started quilting and what recipe works and all these things cannot be found digitally. And so, again, I just think in-person reunions just create that context.
Ernie, I have about 20 seconds left. I'm just curious why these happen in the summer.
Well, it's simple. School's out. School's out in the summer. People can travel and you can get parks and all this kind of stuff. So, yeah, that's the best time to have it during the summer.
And Jasmine, I wish I had time to ask you more about this quote that you have here. Memory is medicine, wisdom is inheritance, but that'll have to be a topic for another day. Jasmine Ballard, founder of Executive Creative Director of Melanotion, Dr. Denise Sproul with Johnson C. Smith University, and Ernie Suggs, a journalist with the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Thank you all for the hour.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Charlotte Talks is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from Mazda of South Charlotte. Our executive producer is Gabe Altieri. The senior producer is Sarah D'Elia. The producer is Chris Jones. For more information on Charlotte Talks, to listen to past episodes, or to subscribe to the Charlotte Talks podcast, visit wfae.org/charlottetalks.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, using Mazda's customer-centric approach to cars to create a car buying and servicing experience where the customer is the center of their business. More at mazdaofsouthcharlotte.com.